What's up, everyone? It is past the mic. We are back. It is Wednesday, September 20th. Off week two of the NFL, going into week three. We will get to the NFL and the Birds. Rough game last Sunday and the big divisional matchup against the Giants this coming week in a bit. But we also have a couple other things to talk about. So we're going to hit the Philly or the Flyers and Sixers first. I'm here with Briggs. Briggs, what's up, man?
Not doing too bad, coming off an Eagles loss this week. So it's always a rougher week when you're dealing with that loss. But, you know, now that we're about to turn the corner, looking closer into the game against the Giants, seeing how poorly the Giants look, you get a little excited that we should be able to bounce back strong this upcoming game.
Yeah, huge game this week. And I think, you know, one of the other exciting things, and I guess what we'll kind of lead with for this pod is, you know, some of the other sports are starting to pick up a little bit. I mean, obviously college football's in full swing. We got baseball playoffs coming up. And we've talked about the Phillies a little bit, even though they're not in playoff contention, have been pretty exciting over the last couple weeks. But now we get into that fun time of the fall where you've got hockey and basketball starting to kick off. And, you know, we've got training camp for the Flyers. They've got a split squad tonight against the Islanders already. Sixers training camp getting underway. So you're going to start getting those, you know, not only weekends to look forward to, but also weekdays where, you know, the Sixers are on a Tuesday night, the Flyers are on the Wednesday, you've got Thursday night football, you've got Sixers Friday. I mean, you've got stuff going on every night. So really exciting time. You know, something obviously any diehard sports fan really looks forward to is when all these sports kind of come to a head, especially at that, you know, beginning of October time frame. There's not necessarily a ton to talk about around the Flyers, but there was a bit of Sixers news that came out today. Brett Brown had a press conference with the media and shared some news about some of the Sixers guys. So, Briggs, why don't you kind of go over what went down today with the Sixers?
Yeah, so news came out today that Ben Simmons has been reported and stated by Brett Brown and Brian Colangelo many a times, will be the point guard of this team, and he has no minutes restriction going into preseason and training camp and looking forward into the season, which is really big news because I think a lot of people, myself included, were concerned that they were going to play super cautious as they have done in years prior. But knowing that they're pretty much just saying, you know, Ben's healthy since we've seen him dunking against white scrubs like me and you on courts in Australia, that what we're seeing isn't something that they aren't seeing. So that's good news. But then additionally, some news that is slightly concerning. Joel Embiid has still not been cleared for 5-on-5 workout. And he's coming off a meniscus tear where, you know, so he had that surgery back. I believe it ended up being in March. Typically, it's, I think, only a few months recovery, 2 to 3 months recovery for that type of injury. Now, they've always played it cautious with Joel, but at this point, I don't really see why he hasn't been cleared for 5-on-5. This is a type of injury that going into last season, he could have played the remainder of the season with the injury. It's not a torn ACL. It's not an Achilles. You know, it's not one of these injuries where you can't see the court for a playoff run if necessary. He literally could have been out there. So I don't see how he could be set back at this point since it's almost October.
Yeah, so the way I see it, there's one of three things happening right now with Embiid. I'm going to lay it out. And before that, I guess, happy about Simmons, looking forward to him being our point guard. I think he's going to be better than Embiid. That's all I have to say.
You can't just throw that out there and not.
We'll get more into the Sixers as we go, but I think Simmons is going to be awesome. But with Embiid, I think it's one of three things. One, the Sixers are still the Sixers. And by that, I mean management still just being very slow, very cautious with the media, and very deliberate in how they communicate anything. So this could be nothing, but the Sixers are still the Sixers. And I think it's something that we as a fan base have to be prepared for as we go into this season, because everyone's ready to jump in head first to the Sixers. And whether it's going to be their performance on the court or their management style, I think there's still this overarching process and this overarching method to how this team's being managed that I don't think is going to change significantly this year just because all of these pieces are going to be, you know, on the table. So I think first, it could just be the Sixers are just trying not to disclose anything. They've had this plan in place forever, and it is what it is. Second, and this I hope is not the case, but there could be something going on with Embiid's feet. That's the only thing. I mean, there's no reason, like you said, the meniscus should be healed. So to me, the only thing that also could be holding him up is if there's some, you know, stress worry with his foot or with some other part of his body. So that's a concern of mine. Lastly, and something that we've talked about before, just personally, I think it's probably a contract thing. And I think he wants to lock in a contract prior to going into this season. Don't necessarily blame him for wanting to do that, considering how much of an injury risk he is. I think the deadline is October 16th for anyone to, you know, lock in a deal. So we'll see what happens. I hope he's not expecting to get max money or anything, but it could be a Steph Curry situation where, you know, I mean, obviously Curry was more established than Embiid in terms of playing games, but he definitely signed with the Warriors for, you know, a cheaper deal because of his ankles. And, you know, that turned out to be one of the main reasons why the Warriors were able to have some cap space flexibility in the future as they continued building their program and ultimately won a couple championships, as we all know. So if we could snag Embiid for, I don't know, we've talked about it, 3 years, $60 million, 4 years, $80 million, somewhere in the like $20 million a year range. Yeah, it's a ton to pay for a guy who's played 31 games in his career. But if he's healthy, I think everyone will agree that it's a bargain price for a guy who should be a game-changing franchise centerpiece for years to come. So I think that's probably the most likely scenario, and I really hope it's not the second. But we'll see. I don't know. It's always, you know, interesting to see how the Sixers message things. It's obviously frustrating. But yeah, I'm hoping that everything's fine. They work something out with him contractually and we see him on the court for some of the preseason games, because I'd like to see Embiid, Fultz, and Simmons together starting to mesh, because I do think it's going to take some time for the three of them to get used to playing together.
So my only concern with Joel is kind of like you said, the whole foot thing, never really popped in my mind, but you are 100% correct in the sense that the Sixers are not transparent with any of the information they provide about any of the players. So I really hope that doesn't come into fruition.
It's tough because we're critical of them for not being transparent, but really there's no, like, before the season starts, I mean, outside of ticket sales, obviously, but they're already all sold. There's no reason at this point not to be transparent. Like, no, all tickets are sold. They've locked in that money. They don't make money necessarily on the resales. So, like, I think it's competitively, I think that they're still probably, you know, at an advantage to not disseminate that information. But it's just frustrating as a fan because we obviously want to know.
No, I completely agree. And then, again, I agree with you. I think the contract – I would be okay 4 years, 80 to 90 million, because to me that doesn't strap you so much where you can't build the roster still to be competitive, because the high risk, high reward situation with him is just so large. And he's not a player like an Andrew Bynum who has injury history, but then showed he didn't really want to play basketball. It seems like Joel wants to be on the court. He loves being on the court. He wants to be a star. So I think with his mindset, I'm more comfortable with giving him that type of money, because I don't see him getting that money and then kind of taking a step back. Right. I see him is getting that money and only just working twice as hard. But like you said, this team, I would like to see them play in the preseason, like you stated, because I don't think we can make the playoffs unless we get chemistry by mid-December.
Yeah, they've got to have some. Yeah, they have to have something going on by, you know, the turn of the new year, I would say.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be bad this year, so I think you could sneak into an eight seed, like, you know, somewhere between 35 and 40 wins. But yeah, I agree. They've got to have some chemistry for sure.
They're going to need to have a similar January to last year, if not better, no matter what. Because I don't think they're going to have a hot start. So turn January, they're going to have to just start hot, because at that time they have to have their chemistry and the way they play together figured out.
Yeah, and it's really, honestly, it's just hard to project anything with them, because I actually have no idea. Like, Simmons, I don't know. Like, he could just come in. I was thinking about it the other day, right before I fell asleep. I was, like, dreaming about Ben Simmons. But I was like, what if he just comes in and can shoot? Like, if he can come in and shoot, then, like, he's going to be amazing. And I don't know. He's going to be the kind of guy who, against a bad team, can carry you to a degree. And then to supplement him with both, like, I don't know. Or he comes in and he can't shoot, and then, like, you're just kind of where you thought you were, and they do need to build that chemistry more.
But then J.J. Redick gets more shots.
Right, yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. But I think, yeah, you're right in that they need to get some chemistry. Hopefully they can use training camp in the preseason to start that. But I think we need to be realistic as fans and understand that the first month, month and a half of the season is really going to be about, you know, getting the chemistry, figuring out what everyone's role on the team is, and being accepting of the fact that Ben Simmons is going to be playing point guard as a 6'10", 6'11 guy. He's going to turn the ball over. Things might get a little sloppy. I think Brett Brown's been trying to set that expectation. So we just have to make sure that we're patient as fans as we watch the process continue to unfold.
No, absolutely. I mean, I've had the same – I don't dream about Ben Simmons like you do.
He's a lefty too. I think that's a big part of it. I'm a lefty for basketball. So, like, I think I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that scares me, because I, outside of you and Thaddeus Young and Derek Coleman, I don't really love lefty shooters. Oh.
There aren't many of them. I think, who's the other? There's a lefty, well, that Ingles guy on the Jazz is pretty good.
He is pretty good. But yeah, I mean, Mike Conley Jr. is a lefty. He's not terrible. But with Ben Simmons, I think he's not going to be an awful shooter, because he's had a year to practice. And if we saw anything with Embiid over the 2 years that he had to work on his shot, the Sixers coaches, I think, are pretty good talent developers. They got Robert Covington to play NBA minutes. TJ McConnell playing NBA minutes. Nick Stauskas is playing. Like, guys that don't necessarily belong in the league.
Some out of necessity, to be fair.
Yes, but at the same time, they were able to coach him up enough where they could get wins with these guys.
Yeah, true.
So I think if Ben Simmons can shoot anywhere from 28 to 32% from outside.
Like threes?
Yeah. I think that would be serviceable.
I want him at 35%.
I would say 28 to 32%, because just think about it. Redick and Fultz are going to get your majority of outside shots.
Yeah.
And then additionally, Covington, when he's in, and Embiid.
Don't sleep on Embiid.
That's what I'm saying. And then you have Embiid. So he doesn't have to be that guy. He just has to be a threat.
Yeah. I agree. All right, cool. All right, we're going to talk about the Sixers a lot. We're going to talk about basketball a lot. I'm really excited for the basketball season. I've been reading up so much on the college basketball season as well. Just very excited. Lots of basketball talk to come. Hockey, I don't really know. Not much is going on with the Flyers right now. We're going to skip them. sorry, hockey fans, this may not be your podcast. But let's shift gears to football. Let's talk about the Eagles. Before we get there, I do want to just quickly get your impressions on, you know, just quick impressions on each of the teams in the NFL right now. So what we'll do is we'll go game by game, just results from the games from this past week. I'll say my quick impression of both teams or whatever, something. You go with yours, and then we'll dive into the Eagles-Chiefs game. But yeah, just want to kind of get our thoughts on where things are with some of these teams in the NFL. I think there are a couple of surprises, some things that we're not surprised by. So we'll just do that, and then we'll, you know, dive into our Birds analysis as always. Sound good?
Yes.
Cool. All right, so let's just get rolling. Last Thursday, garbage game. Texans, Bengals, 13-9. Just a lot of really ugly scores. I think that's going to be a trend as we look through this week. My take, Bengals are a mess. Got to sit Andy Dalton. Texans, I think they wish they could have signed Tony Romo.
Cincinnati, I wouldn't bench Andy Dalton. I would consider firing Marvin Lewis most likely at the end of the season.
They got to make a change, right?
And then Texans, defense can win you games still. And
won them a game.
Yeah, defense will win them a game. Big Deshaun Watson fan. I think he's only going to get better. I think Texans year two Deshaun Watson will be a much improved team.
Okay, we're in week two and we're already talking about year two. Nice. Next game, Cardinals-Colts. Wow, another really bad game between – two teams, I think one team, I think we both would say the Colts without Luck are just tragic. Not that they were going to be very good with them. But 16-13, Cardinals in overtime. Cardinals don't look very good either. Defense is solid, but Carson Palmer looked old.
Yeah, Pagano, nice guy. Gambled with him. He's got to go.
Yeah. They're the two hot seat coach. I mean, Lewis and Pagano, it's like, ugh.
Colts, least amount of talent of any roster in the NFL, including Cleveland and the Jets. And the Cardinals, Carson Palmer, says they got to find a quarterback. He's done.
Yep. I think they're going to have to look to the draft this year for a QB.
Absolutely.
All right, Pats, Saints. Pats are back. Saints defense is terrible. Brady, unbelievable. I mean, yes, the Saints' defense is terrible. He's 40 years old and he just threw for 450 yards in the game. Like, it's unbelievable. A lot of injuries for the Pats this game, so we'll see what happens as we kind of move forward. Because they've been pretty banged up over the first 2 weeks. But yeah, 36-20 Pats. I think everyone kind of assumed they'd be back on track after that week one loss.
I mean, they're 1-1. Really, they're 7-1 because they have 6 wins in the division lined up. So they only need 3 more wins to make the playoffs. And the Saints, under Sean Payton, they have not been good for most of the seasons he's been there. And Drew Brees is maybe the most overrated quarterback this side of Eli Manning that we've seen the last 5 to 6 years.
It's tough, I would say, too, for the Saints because they have the most – there's an interesting stat. I think over the last 2 or 3 years, they have the most dead cap space of any team. Just money that they're paying players who aren't on their roster. And I think it obviously shows in their defense. I have Michael Thomas on my fantasy team. I'm hoping, you know, Willie Snead comes back, takes some of the pressure off him, and I at least get a big season out of him. Next game, Vikings-Steelers. Sam Bradford got hurt. I mean, shocker. So I mean, he didn't play. The Steelers, they look okay. I mean, they don't look great, but they're 2-0. Nothing too exciting here.
Bradford gets hurt in practice. Bradford, very valuable to that team. Who would have thought Bradford was that valuable to a roster? And I think
they win this game if Bradford's playing.
Yeah,
actually,
they most likely do win the game. I think Vikings are a much better team with Bradford than they probably are a 9-10 win team with Bradford. Steelers, I think they're still getting the rust off, having Martavis Bryant back, Le'Veon Bell back, and then the defense losing Lawrence Timmons, and then T.J. Watt went down. Steelers, I'm not overly impressed with. Still think they probably are the favorites for the division, but I don't think that they can compete with some of the other teams in the AFC.
Yep. Fair. Bears, Bucks. Bears are trash. Bucks are good. Bucks are really good. Flying under. They're the sexy pick this year for a good reason.
Yeah, Bears again. Most likely John Fox's time to go. He has done nothing with that roster. I think their season just over. I don't think they should put Trubisky in though either. Because
I completely agree. I don't think it's worth it. Your season's done anyway. Let him just develop.
Yeah, exactly. So let him sit. Maybe week 10 or 11, you bring him in. And then Tampa, I think the NFC South is theirs for the taking. I think they're the most complete team in that division. And I am a huge Jameis Winston fan. Go famous.
They've got weapons. You've got Evans. You've got DeSean Jackson. You have Doug Martin, who's going to be coming back. You have O.J. Howard, who was a great pickup in the draft, I think. And then Cameron Brate. Their offense is very good, and their defense is really good as well. So, yeah, they're going to definitely challenge Atlanta, I would say, in that division. That's a tough division. I mean, Saints are always tough just because they usually can score. So for them to be the worst team in your division, that's not an easy division this year. Bills, Panthers. Bills just, I don't know. I mean, the Panthers have a good defense, but they can't score either. So I wasn't overly impressed with either team.
Yeah, Panthers, again, good defense. Cam Newton's regressing once again. Don't expect them to compete for the division. I think it's Tampa and Atlanta. And then the Bills, they're doing what they set out to do. Pretty much they're rebuilding. They're going to take losses, and they're going to play games close.
Yep. Titans, Jags. Titans look pretty good. I think they're the favorite in the AFC South. Jags, they're just – they have a pretty good defense, but they're just not there. They're just not there yet. They need a quarterback. They need a quarterback, and losing Allen Robinson just completely limits that offense.
Yeah. Titans, again, I do agree they should be the favorite. Mariota's playing well. Derrick Henry is really unseated. DeMarco Murray is the top dog on that team. And then – Jags, I think they'll bounce back. Fournette needs. I think they just need to continue to get him carries. Defensively, they just have so much talent. They were really in that game for a lot longer than it looked like. Yeah. So that game wasn't as a blowout as you would see based on the score.
Yep. No, I agree. All right, cool. So we've got the Browns and Ravens. Ravens look good, but they've only played the Bengals and the Browns, so it's hard to judge. Browns, I mean, they're road favorites against the Colts, so they got something going for them.
No, Browns, I like a lot what the Browns are doing. I liked Hugh Jackson as a hire. I wanted him to be the Eagles coach when we were searching for a coach last year. He's getting planted to Sean Kizer, and then the backup came in and played decently well. Their defense has played surprisingly well without Myles Garrett. And then the Ravens, like you said, haven't played tough competition, but their defense looks much improved from the last few seasons. It looks like it's back to being a Ravens defense.
Yeah.
And, you know, anytime that you add a Jeremy Maclin to your offense, they're only going to get better, I think.
Yep, I agree. Jets, Raiders. Jets suck. Raiders look pretty good. Tell you what, that AFC West is definitely the best division in football. Raiders look really good. I think everyone expected them to take a step forward, and looks like they have.
Yeah, Jets are
also having a great time.
Yeah, Jets are awful. Literally no reason to talk about them for the rest of the season. And Oakland, I love. I love that. I love Derek Carr. I love Amari Cooper. I love Marshawn Lynch. I love Khalil Mack. I like this team.
They've got a lot of guys who, I like rooting for their guys to succeed. I don't know. Not really for Suggs. I just like them. Yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. There's no reason. I don't know why, but I also am a Jack Del Rio guy. I don't know what it is. Every time I see one of his press conferences, I'm just like, I'm in. I buy it.
Great. So Dolphins, Chargers, Dolphins, Jay Cutler, hey. But that Chargers kicker, he lost them the game. So it's tough. Yeah, so 19-17. Koo, that kicker who got a lot of hope for the season, missed a 43-yarder to win after getting a kick blocked at the end of last week against Denver. Just not a good stretch for him. We'll see, but I mean, the Chargers are a really, really strong fourth team in that AFC West. I think Jay Cutler, you know, they had a pretty good game plan for him. Areas I've ever seen in my life. And, Dolphins with an impressive road win, especially after all the Irma stuff. Very, very impressive by that team.
Yeah, Dolphins, I think, will continue to get better more time. I think it helped that they actually had that Irma because it gave Jay Cutler an extra week to learn the offense and work with the
crew.
And Jay Cutler always played his best football with Adam Gase, so not too surprising. On the other hand, Chargers are being the Chargers. They do this each and every year. They lose close games. They play really good football. Additionally, Koo is very conveniently named Koo, so the only thing that he's got going for him is when the Boo Birds come out, he can just be like, oh, they're cheering my name. But they're, you know, it doesn't really sound Boo, but he can just pretend, oh, Koo, yeah.
There's literally enough people at those games to even be heard. They'd all be cheering because they're all fans of the other team. So,
yeah talk one thing. Yeah, Chargers fans, not in LA. Don't have any.
No. So, game that I think both of us are happy with the outcome. Broncos Cowboys. Broncos just smacked the Cowboys around. Now the Broncos defense is incredible, right? They've got the corners to kind of just sit out there on islands and really stuff the line, and that's what they did. Elliott had 8 yards. Dak was kind of all over the place. I think it was one of those where they put the ball in Dak's hand and tried to make him make plays, and he really wasn't able to. On the flip side, Trevor Siemian was able to pick apart that defense and was very impressive.
Denver is for real. I think Siemian can easily do what Manning did in 2015. And then Dallas, overreaction, they're going to bounce back. It was a type of game where they got down and they kind of just lost their game plan, where for some reason they just stopped giving Ezekiel Elliott the ball and they were only down, two scores, but it wasn't like it was over. It was the third quarter.
It was weird. The whole game was weird, like with the delay and yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Dak's worst game as a pro. I think he'll bounce back. Obviously I hate Zeke Elliott. He's a douche, but he'll bounce back too. I think it's an overreaction, and they're still the best team in our division.
Yep. Redskins get a W over the Rams. I really don't have anything to say about that game. The Rams are fine, like whatever, and the Redskins are whatever.
Rams better than I thought they were going to be this year. I think Goff has, big mistakes in the fourth quarter this game, but it looks like he could have been a first-round draft pick now.
Right.
And the Redskins will probably somehow split that series because they do still have enough talent on that team to win games.
Yeah. Seahawks, Niners. Seahawks don't look good. Niners aren't very good. it's that line. The Seahawks line, offensive line, just terrible. I've talked with people about this, though. They're always terrible. That line's always terrible at the beginning of the year. They'll figure it out, I think, in time. So I wouldn't be that worried if I was a Seahawks fan.
Nope, 49ers playing better than I think people anticipated under Kyle Shanahan. Seahawks defense still really good, so don't forget that. Right. And their offense does this every single year. So come November, they'll probably have it figured out when they come to play the Eagles at home. And they're going to run that type of offense that eventually picks up where it's just Russell Wilson running around, throwing the ball up in the air, and his guys make catches.
And that division's trash. Like, the second-best team in that division is probably the Rams.
Yeah, they're going to cakewalk to the playoffs.
Yeah. All right, the big Sunday night game was Packers-Falcons. Falcons look pretty good at home. Now, the Packers didn't have either of their starting tackles, so kind of hard to judge there. But I think Atlanta's still for real. I think they're a good team, and I think the Packers are going to be fine as well. So I think they're probably, you know, two of your top four teams in the NFC, and I think nothing's changed, in my opinion, from this game.
Totally agree. Falcons. I wasn't sure. I'm still not 100%. I'm 95% sold on the Falcons.
Vic Beasley getting hurts them a lot on defense.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. So losing Vic Beasley, we'll see how their defense reacts to that. And then Packers. The Packers are making the playoffs. They might, even if they don't win the division, they will make the playoffs. That game wasn't. I mean, it got out of hand, and then they kind of came back. But when you're playing without your two starting tackles and Jordy Nelson goes down and then Randall Cobb goes down, like, you're not going to win that game.
Yeah. Yep. And then lastly, Monday night, you know, preview of the Giants for us. They looked terrible against the Lions, at least offensively. Lions looked fine. I think the Lions look like the Lions. They always kind of look like this. Like, Matt Stafford's throwing the ball around. They do have a little more on defense, I would say, than in years past. And Abdullah looks like a decent back. He was someone they didn't have last year. But, yeah, I think the bigger story out of Monday night was just how putrid the Giants' offensive line looked and how bad Eli really looks as a result. So I think it was encouraging for us going into this week to see that result. Not sure what you thought.
No, I think I was surprised. I love what Detroit has done first 2 weeks. I'm a big Matt Stafford guy. I think he has only gotten better, and guy can make all the throws, and he stopped making the bad. He stopped making the risky pass, and he stopped, you know, throwing into tight coverage. And so I really like what they're doing. Their defense, like you said, has improved. The Giants look awful. Eli Manning is who the Eagles fans know he is for the rest of the league now. Their offensive line has three Winston Justices from 2007.
It's not like these, like the, in that game, and we'll get more into it, talk about the matchup coming up this week, but like, they weren't doing anything fancy on Detroit. They were literally just like pushing back the tackle, like that Flowers guy, just pushing him back right into Eli. Eli was falling down at that point. He was like, I don't even want to deal with this.
Yeah, so they're bad, but their defense is still really strong. They played well with Aljanoris Jenkins.
Yeah, not having Jenkins hurts them a lot because Eli Apple looks lost at times.
Yeah, he's much better in the slot.
Yeah, they have talent at every level, though.
It also just saddens me that we don't have Antonio Rodgers Cromartie.
Yeah.
And I understand that in his 2 years here, the defense was bad, but I never thought that we had to get rid of him. And ever since he left, he's been a Pro Bowler with Denver, and he's played super well with the Giants.
Yep.
So that always that hurts me.
All right, so basically one of the reasons I wanted to do that is we're going to talk about the Eagles and Chiefs. Just wanted to set the stage so that we're not overly negative. People don't take this as we're being overly negative about the Eagles. I think there's a lot of teams have a lot of work to do. We kind of highlighted that as we've gone through a lot of these games. I would say the only teams, in my eyes, that have looked really solid over the first 2 weeks are probably Denver – ish, but then Kansas City, obviously. The Bucs have only played 1 week. The Ravens and the Raiders. Like, there's not that many teams. You'd almost count them on one hand in terms of, like, teams that have put together, like, two good games. So as we go into this game, I just wanted to kind of give that little backdrop where we potentially are critical. But let's talk about this game. We both, coming into the week, had it as a loss. By a much wider margin than what the game actually ended up as. 27-20, Eagles lose. Couple quick highlights, I guess. We ran the ball 18% of the time. Two turnovers, a missed 30-yard field goal. Kind of held Tyreek Hill in check by and large, but just gave up a couple big plays and really just kind of showed, I think this game just was a great example of where we are as a team. You know, we can hang in for a little while, but we're going to give up a big play or two. We're going to, you know, have a turnover or two. That's also, you know, going to potentially cost us the game. So overall, I'm not, you know, totally discouraged and giving up hope on the season from this loss, obviously. But yeah, it's just a frustrating game to watch because the team's not as good as the Chiefs, and it was, you know, obviously apparent throughout the game that was the case.
Yeah, I mean, we started the game in the first half, and Chiefs go down that first drive. Defense holds to a field goal, which was nice to see. So you're like, okay, Andy Reid is the type of coach who's always done well at game planning those, you know, first 15 and scripting the first 15, 20 plays. Well, that's good that the defense was able to hold to a field goal. Then we go down, and Torrey Smith drops that touchdown, which it hurt, but we still end up with a field goal. That pass by Carson Wentz also not as accurate as it needs to be. So let's give, you know, blame where blame needs to be placed. You know,
yeah.
You make it easier to catch. He probably catches it. At the same time, Torrey Smith has to catch the ball. So the two of them fucked up, to be blunt. So 3-3. And then after that, offenses don't do much for either team. So defensively, I thought we played really strong. I know that we gave up 27 points. Carson didn't help in that factor in the second half. And I think, you know, the defense played a lot better than the score shows, especially since the secondary was decimated with injuries by the end of the game.
For us to give up 27 points, I mean, you hit the nail on the head, I think, with the secondary. Like, we're in the first half, and I think it was the first or second drive. Jalen Watkins, who's already a backup cornerback, was starting. He goes out of the game. Rodney McLeod out of the game. So we're playing for three quarters with Corey Graham, who just was signed this summer, late in the summer, and Rasul Douglas, who was a third-round pick who everyone said didn't look particularly good throughout the preseason and training camp. So you're stuck with those two guys, and I'll tell you what, like, I mean, there were probably two or three plays I can think of that they hurt you on. But by and large, they kept everything in front of them and made the plays that I would have expected them to make.
No, I think Rasul Douglas surprised me. Now, granted, they didn't really take many deep shots against him, which is what you need to do against a cornerback that has zero closing speed. But the guy tackled better than anybody on our team I've seen in a while. Him and Michael Kendricks.
Like Pro Football Focus, he was the highest rated defensive player on the Eagles for that game.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was impressed with Douglas. Defensively, again, I think that the defensive line is not getting as much pressure as I would like with four. I know that they did get, I think, four and a half sacks, something like that.
They had a good number of sacks. I mean, I didn't think pressure was necessarily the problem.
I don't think it was a problem. But with a team that you look at teams where the defensive line and or like a 3-4 with the linebackers are your catalyst.
Yeah.
Teams like Denver, where their front seven dominates a game. Like if we expect our front four to be as highly paid and to be the catalyst of the team, they need to dominate the game. And I just don't think they're dominating the game so far.
Yeah. I mean, I think they're doing a pretty damn good job. Like, the amount of pressure that they were able to put on Smith compared to what the Pats were able to put on him was markedly better. And I think they did a pretty good job.
I'd give them.
Not the part that wouldn't be the part of the game that I would criticize them for at all.
Well, I'm not saying that, but at the same time, we talk about it each week. What do the Eagles' strength? The Eagles' strength is supposed to be their defensive line. So if that's your strength, I expect that to play better than any other position on the team.
Yeah, I think they did. I mean, I think they did, though. I don't really think any of the other positions played better than them. And I think that if the linebackers are shining, it's because the defensive line is taking up all the attention of the blockers, and they're just free to make plays.
Yeah, I want a defensive line like the Giants had when they won the Super Bowl in 07. Like, that's what we're paying our players like that defensive line. So that's what I expect to see. Then additionally, so then you flip it to the offensive side. Like you said, we didn't run the ball. LeGarrette Blount, who I don't like, so I'm okay with not giving him carries. I think had one touch on the first drive, was not seen again. Fine by me. Unless you're at the goal line, keep him off the field. He's really pretty much just going to get you 2 yards behind this offensive line who doesn't know how to run block. Just awful offensive line play. And then Alshon Jeffery and Torrey Smith got a little more involved in the offense. I think they both played a little bit better, getting a little more chemistry with Carson. Aguilar goes absent, something that we're used to. So maybe that first game was just a mirage.
And they make a hell of a – I mean, he went absent. But that was a hell of a catch at the end.
All right. But at the same
– probably the best catch he's ever made in his career.
Maybe.
It's pretty good. But, yeah, he was non-existent the rest of the game.
Then additionally, the offensive line, like I said, just been bad.
Well, it's interesting. Like, Seumalo, right, caused – I mean, if you look – he caused 4 of the sacks himself, him getting beat. So they are, I mean, there's rumors of buzz, and I'm pretty sure it's actually going to be confirmed if it hasn't already been. Chance Wormack starting at left guard next game.
Well,
which is tough because he came in and he's been playing right guard. And I'm not saying that it's going to be the answer, but they are trying to address it.
My problem with that is, how is he going from being inactive to now you're starting left guard?
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know the whole story about why he wasn't active either. So, I don't know.
He hasn't been active for either the first two games. So, like, I just don't get that.
Yeah. No, I don't know.
So, it'll be interesting. And then you go back to the running back play. Darren Sproles, as I said last week, he is the best running back on the team. He's in his last year here in Philadelphia, most likely. Just keep giving him the ball. He runs the ball better than anybody, both between the tackles and outside. I don't understand why they can't give him 12 to 15 carries if necessary. Smallwood.
Well, he had 10 this game, right?
What'd you say?
I think he had 10 carries for 48 yards or something.
Yeah. So give him 12 to 15. Give him a couple more.
The problem is you still need, right? You still need that other. You need another back because if the most, like, you're not going to run the ball. If you're going to be a balanced offense, which has been the overarching concern from this game, is that we were so unbalanced. You need another guy who's going to step in. And I don't really care. I mean, at this point, I don't care who it is. You need another guy who's going to be able to get you 10 to 15 touches, carries out of the backfield, whether it's Smallwood, whether it's Blount, whether it's a combination of the two, whether it's Clement. I would actually say Clement's probably the guy you got to give a shot to next. And I think they are kind of giving up on Blount because he didn't even have a carry. Like, he didn't have a carry. He had one that got called back for a penalty. He didn't have a carry all game. Like, that's not unintentional.
No. What really happened is Howie Roseman once again is refusing to admit that he was wrong and signed a player who doesn't fit the roster. And I don't think – like, I say this so many times – LeGarrette Blount has literally only been successful in the NFL playing for the Patriots. He went to the Steelers and sucked. He's come to the Eagles and sucked. He's only good on the Patriots. I don't like him. I just want him off the team. Just cut him loose. Get him out. I think he's just a waste of a roster spot. And Clement. I don't want to disrespect him. He's played fantastic. He's played – He's played fantastic on special teams, and they've given him more carries in practice. So I would like to see him get touches in the Giants game.
I agree. No, I think I'd like to. I mean, I think Smallwood runs way too vertically. I think Sproles played a fine game, but at the same time, I think we do, as a fan base, give him a bit of a pass. Like, and this is my big takeaway from this game, right? Like, yes, we can complain about the defense. We can complain about the offense. More specifically, we can complain about the offense. We had two turnovers that cost us that game. We had two turnovers. Kansas City didn't have any. How many points does Kansas City get off those turnovers? Probably 10, I would say, because I don't think the defense necessarily is giving up a touchdown on a full field after that Wentz interception.
No, that's fair.
Yeah, and then Sproles drops a punt, a critical punt, at the end of the first half that if you secure and go down the field, you get the ball at the beginning of the second half with points. Points in hand. I mean, I think that the Sproles drop on the fumble was the turning point in the game. To a degree, I do. Because
you think that Sproles turnover had more of an effect on the game than the Wentz interception?
I think it had more of an effect on the potential outcome of the game. Because
I strongly disagree.
But Mike, right? Think about it this way. And this is and maybe I'm overthinking it, but Sproles catches that ball. We go down the field and put points on the board. We get the kickoff to start the second half. We go down and put points on the board again. All of a sudden, it's like a 10-point game.
But that happened.
What?
But that pretty much is what happened.
What do you mean?
We had the lead, and then Carson went through an interception.
Yeah, but
so that's what I'm saying. How?
No, but I'm saying, though, like, they didn't have any semblance – they wouldn't have had any semblance of momentum whatsoever.
They didn't. Think about it. Once we stop them, boom, momentum's back on us. We hold them to a field goal. We then go all the way down the field in 17 seconds, get a chance for a field goal, and miss it.
Yeah, but that's – whatever. I mean, whatever. We have a rookie kicker. It was a lucky play. Like, I'd throw that out.
But to me, after those things happening, it's almost like I just don't see how you would say that fumble after.
I guess what I'm trying to also say is we're giving Sproles a free pass on the fumble.
I'm not giving him a free pass.
I think we as a fan base.
I'm just saying
I think that was a bigger play. I mean, I think we went into the half trailing in the game because Darren Sproles fumbled that punt.
Yes, that is correct.
And I think if we would have gone into the half with a lead or tied, then it would have potentially been a different story.
And that's where I just completely disagree.
We could have scored right away, and then we could have scored again, and then we could have had the lead, and then it would have been an even bigger lead.
But that's what you keep saying, that we could have had the lead. We did have the lead.
I know. I'm saying a bigger lead.
I don't care how big the lead is. We had the lead with all the momentum in the world. And then our quarterback.
If you're up by 10 or 17, right, on 10, 14, whatever on the road, it's a little bit different than a one possession game.
We wouldn't have been up 17.
All right, 14. Sorry. It could have been 17-3.
Wait, so you're talking – wait, 17-3. So you're thinking we're scoring a touchdown at the end of the half if he doesn't fumble?
If we kicked a field goal and then we scored two touchdowns, that's 20.
Okay. So – okay.
So I'm just saying, I'm extrapolating, and maybe I'm just overstating my opinion to try and make the point that Sproles has in the past dropped passes that no one talks about. He had this fumble. I think I'm just trying to be fair in my assessment of the team. I think that was a much bigger play that nobody's talking about.
No, I don't disagree with you that Sproles definitely has gotten a pass because
no one ever talks about the Wentz interception either. So, I mean, that's fair too. No one ever talks about any of Wentz's interceptions.
No, but I do agree with you that Sproles definitely has gotten a pass because he's been the best weapon on the team since he's been here because all the other talent has left.
Right.
It's one of those things where all the other players are so much worse than him that he's definitely gotten that pass. He does drop a lot of passes coming across the middle that are literally right in his hands.
Right.
But I just totally disagree that that play had the impact that it did.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, right, and I guess I'm saying, like, what the domino effect could have been. But it's just being on the road, potentially building a – not huge, huge lead, but building a lead to two possessions would have been really critical for us, I think, to hold the lead in this game. Because the whole time when it was a one-possession game, I never felt confident because we have an inexperienced quarterback, an offensive line that can't block, and a run game that can't sustain anything.
Yeah, I mean, my whole thing is, like, and since we've talked about the Sproles turnover, let's turn over to the quarterback here. I just don't understand how people continue to give him passes for these huge mistakes. Like, he threw the ball into a guy's helmet who is 5 inches shorter than his throwing plane.
Like, yeah, I don't understand how. And he threw another one or two passes on, like, almost on the ground to Sproles.
It just baffles me. And that's just a critical time in the game where you cannot turn the ball over.
And this is the thing that's frustrating about this game, right? Because you lose as a result of these turnovers. And how many turnovers does Kansas City have? None. So it's like, that's what wins. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what wins and loses you games. You can say all that you want about the run pass differential. You can say all that you want about the injuries that we had, the missed field goal, whatever. I mean, the missed field goal didn't help, but I don't think it lost you the game. I think the turnovers lose you the game.
Absolutely. And so that's why I think, like you said, you think Sproles, I think Wentz. Well, if you just look at it, the combination of the two of them.
Right, right.
Caused the loss.
Exactly.
But my whole thing was, Wentz didn't play great again. I think he played okay.
I think he played very well the first three quarters of the game.
Turned it over the third quarter.
Oh, okay. Well, leading up to the turnover, I thought he played very well. I thought he hit a lot of passes. I mean, he had a couple misfires, but he was pretty crisp on a lot of the stuff over the middle. He put the ball up to let his receivers try and make plays on it. I thought he played well, but then it almost took a 180.
Yeah.
Interception. And you can say all that you want about the pressure that's getting on the guy, but you just got to take care of the ball. He almost lost a fumble as well. I mean.
Yeah, he's just too careless with the ball. And I'm almost – and I know Eagles fans are literally going to freak out because they're going to be like, you're overreacting, you're a Wentz hater. But he's starting to show signs of the Romo gene, where he plays really well for three quarters of a game, and in fourth quarters he just doesn't win games for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's starting to become concerning. I mean, it's too early in his career to, like, officially have that be a thing. But it's something we have to watch because, I mean, he hasn't really made those winning plays at the end of many games.
Like, people always talked about Romo could put up numbers, but at the end of the day, he didn't show up in the clutch and he didn't win games. That's pretty much what Wentz has done so far in his career.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, now I will say, for a young quarterback, I don't think that's, like, that surprising.
No. But at the same time,
you need to see him make that jump. And I think that has to happen probably at some point this year.
No, absolutely. Because everyone, if you want him to be a franchise quarterback, then it's something that has to happen.
Yeah. 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 So, I mean, by and large, I after saying all of this, I still think they played better than I thought they were going to play.
No, absolutely.
No, it's tough, right? Like, I'm still very frustrated from watching the game, and I think you would say the same thing, but I'm still, like, yeah, I was surprised, I think, by how they played, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
No, and I think it gives you promise that the team may have a stronger defense this year, no matter who's in the secondary, just because Schwartz looks like he's just learned from last year on how to best use the talent that's on the roster. Seems like he's just game planning better with his players.
Yeah, it is a shame because both of the big touchdown, the Kelce shovel and the Hunt run, were both on our backup defensive line units.
Yeah, and the shovel pass, though, you got to see coming. If Andy Reid runs 7 a game.
It was, yeah, I was like, God damn it. Classic. Like
that hurt.
I will say, like, it's night and day, Andy's play design versus Doug's. Like, it is – Andy had some very impressive, I thought, just formations, scheme things on the offensive side of the ball that we always used to have, too. I thought they're just an impressive team. They're a good team. They're better than us. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah. And I think just, you know, we can kind of wrap up and go into, we're a 1-1 team going to our first home game, our home opener against a bitter rival who we should overmatch. And that's kind of where we're at. We're a team that's played good football for 2 weeks. Now it's time to take that next step forward, win the next game, get back on, you know, back on the horse, and just dominate a team that is down in the dumps. You know, kick them while they're down. So I think this is a must-win game for the Eagles in regards to, if they can't beat a bad Giants team at home, then maybe last week the concerns are more prevalent than the positives that came out of that game.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is – it's a huge game. I mean, it's a huge game for both teams. The Giants are coming in desperate. If they lose, their season is over. If we lose, we're still 1-1 in the division. I mean, it's not fully over, but I think that team may just, like, cave in if they lose. Like, I don't know. You have the coach saying stuff about the quarterback. You've got the quarterback dying. They're not making any attempts on the offensive line to change anything. It's just not – it's not good there. And the fans are turning on the team already. They were booing after the first drive last game.
It's the first time I've ever had respect for a Giants fan. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. So yeah, it's going to be a game, too, where it scares me because everyone's on the Birds. They should be, but everyone's on the Eagles. Everyone's like, if we win – you know, we're going to win by double digits. They're going to score 10 points. Like, we've got this. We're going to sack Eli 10 times. It's going to be a cakewalk. We're going to be home. Like, it scares me. But when you do look at it, like, I mean, the matchups are pretty ideal for us. Beckham's not perfectly healthy. I mean, our biggest strength's going against their glaring weakness. So, like, there's this gargantuan mismatch that should pretty much dictate the game. But again, where you go to is, if we're going to have any trouble in this game, it's going to be turnovers. And it's going to be giving the ball up against a pretty good defense. So there are, you know, there's some areas for concern, and I think that's probably the biggest one as I look at this game.
Well, I look at this game, and crazy things happen in Giants-Eagles games. Just, they always have. A lot of times it happens in the Eagles' favor, but there's times where crazy stuff happens for the Giants. And I don't like facing a team that is literally win or go home pretty much. That's never good, especially a team with the Giants who had super high expectations and a team that has a good defense, that they're not void of talent. They're not a bad team. They're a team playing badly.
Right.
And that there's a big distinction there, because a bad team, you just roll over, you're not too worried. But a team playing badly is a team that could just click at any moment and all of a sudden, oh, shit, we didn't see that coming.
I will say, you do have the other variable.
Eli Manning.
Like Eli against the Eagles at home, like at the link. Like, he's so bad at the link. So it's just – it's like hard because I want to, like, every once in a while my gut will be like, ah, we might lose this game, but then I'm like, damn, we might also just beat them like 35-0, because that's what happens sometimes with Eli.
No, I totally agree. And I think when we did our season predictions, I gave the Eagles a win this game because I said Eagles at home against the Giants and Eli, that's a win. Like that's what happens over the last 3 years. That should happen.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't like the fact that they're coming in 0-2.
It's tough, though, because even if you look at that offense, right, they haven't scored 20 points in like 10 games.
Yeah, again, they're due. Like, it's all those things like
– like they're due, but I mean, it's just hard because you watch them their first two games and it's just like there's nothing there telling you that they're actually going to do it.
No, but those are the, and that's why these are the
irrational, it's that irrational fear that you have as a fan.
They scare you the most. And their defense matches up really well with our offense. They're a team that can also rush the passer. They're a team that can stop the run when the running game is not going to be a prevalent part of the offense. And their cornerback and their secondary is probably top five in the league.
But they don't have Jenkins. I don't think they'll have Jenkins for this game either.
I haven't heard either way on that. But Landon Collins came back last week and looked really good. So having him back hurts too. But I just – for a quarterback who's will throw the ball around and a team that can't run the ball, I think it's a dangerous matchup for us offensively in the sense that I don't know how well we'll be able to move the ball.
Yeah. And I think like – I think that's going to be the critical thing, and that's also a scary piece to the game because if it's a low-scoring game, anything could happen.
And I think that's what it's going to be. I don't expect a lot of points in this game.
Yeah, so – yeah, I don't know. I'm just hoping we get Eli face. He throws, like, two pick sixes. I don't know. Because this is, like – it's either going to be really close or it's going to spiral out of control and the Eagles are going to crush them.
I hope so. I think we may get Eli face because the Eagles corners were jumping routes last week and they came close to getting a couple on Alex Smith. And Eli is prone for interceptions against this type of Eagles front that he'll chuck it up.
And we're going to be, I mean, we're going to be in the backfield a lot of the game, I think. I think Schwartz will even blitz. Like, I think we're going to be making sure that Eli's very uncomfortable and tastes the field quite often.
And I think that this is Doug really has to show up because this is his one game. He has two of them this year where he'll be favored in coaching.
Yeah, McAdoo's a trainer.
So, I mean, hey, Doug, Doug's got the upper hand in coaching. So, you know, show us, Doug. You got
to do something.
Put your dick on the table here. Put McAdoo in his place.
Yeah, I'm just so excited. I mean, home opener, like, it's going to be rocking down there. You hope, like, you saw in the game last week, the Chiefs, it was their home opener. They were flying around. Guys are all, like, jumping up and down. That Sorensen guy almost, like, jumped over, just completely over our guy on one play. Like, they were just flying. I think our guys are going to be flying around, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Like, they're going to be so amped up. Is it a blackout, do you know?
I don't believe so. It's too early in the season for a blackout.
I love a good blackout, though.
I agree.
It'd be sick if they trotted out in, like, Kelly Green uniform. Like, if they just did something, it'd be awesome.
Yeah, the Eagles aren't that cool, let's be honest. They're not the Sixers.
But it should be just an electric environment out there, and you hope that they just come out with a ton of energy.
No, and they have to.
The longer that you let the Giants stay in the game, the scarier it is.
Oh, I absolutely agree.
You just want to step right on – I mean, you just want to step on their neck right away.
So, I mean, I don't think we have much more to touch on. I think we talked about a lot of the aspects of this game outside of predictions.
Predictions. Okay. I'm going to go. I think I predicted the Eagles to win at the beginning.
You did.
Yeah. I'm very torn on this prediction. Because like I said before, it's either going to be a really close game or I think we're going to kill them. And I think if I was on like sports talk radio in Philly, I'd be like, yeah, Eagles 31, Giants 3. But in reality, I think it's going to be like 17-13 Eagles.
All right, you douche.
So that's my prediction, 17-13.
That's so close to my prediction. I'm the same way. I don't think it's high scoring like I said earlier. I actually have 17-16 Eagles.
Okay. So the line's 5.5 or 6. It's going up the Eagles' direction.
Yeah, I would take Giants with the points.
Yeah, I'm just not putting that on this game.
Who would you put player of the game?
Yeah, so my player of the game is going to be Michael Kendricks.
Woo!
I think Kendricks is going to end up with like 2 sacks and maybe an interception. But he's going to get an – if he gets an interception, it's going to be on, like, a batted pass that just falls into his hands because that's the they're the only interceptions he gets. But I think they're going to be blitzing him. I think he'll get home a couple times. Yeah, I think Kendricks. I like that.
I think – I go Malcolm Jenkins. I think he catches the ball for once this week. I think he does get an interception, and I just think he plays solid defense. But I think his interception will be big. It'll be a second-half interception that will help solidify the win.
Nice. I like it. But yeah, I'm pumped for the game. I mean, if we win this 2-0 in the division, going across the country to San Diego, feeling good about where we are. I'm excited. I'm hoping we can pull out the W because I think that a win here, you know, really sets us up well for the next couple of weeks.
A win here allows that Chargers game to be not nearly as vital.
Right. So. Yep, it's pretty much going to be a repeat of weeks 1 and 2.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, we'll see. Any shout-outs for you this week?
No real shout-outs.
What about James Franklin icing the Georgia State kicker?
I was waiting for you to bring that up. I have zero issue with James Franklin icing the kicker.
Dude, I have no problem with it either. Do you know how much money Georgia State made by coming up to Penn State?
They made a fortune. And guess what? If you have a chance to shut out a team, God damn it, you better shut them out. Because guess what? If the Eagles...
The kicker could have made it.
Yeah, kicker could have made it. And guess what? If the Eagles had done it in the NFL, I bet you no one would be talking about it. So, you know, suck a dick to all those people who are complaining about Franklin and the... Penn State, you know, icing the kicker. Guess what? You had 59 minutes and 57 seconds to score, and you didn't. So, you know, suck a dick.
Nice. I figured I'd throw that one up to you. But, my shout-out's going to be to the schedule makers for Villanova basketball because news just came out today. We have a 5 o'clock p.m. game March 3rd. Weekend game against Georgetown. Big tailgate time for us. We didn't have any good times for tailgates, so we'll see everyone at D3 in the Wells Fargo lot on March 3rd. Book your tickets today. Book your travel. Should be a good tailgate.
Is that a Saturday game?
I think it's a Saturday, yeah.
That is big.
Yeah, so it'll be good. I'm excited. I'm excited for the Cats. Excited to get rolling with NBA basketball, college basketball. And then obviously, you know, continuing through the football season. So let's get out of here. Go Birds.
Go Birds.